just yeah. like, well, you could go find those high growth stocks. I mean, who doesn't want to go into a cryptocurrency and go up 300% overnight? Well,
right.
Just like a bad tee shot, go yeah, left, right, go right. right. It could mm-hmm. ruin your day, ruin your score, just like a bad investment account.
Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome back to another great episode of Mint Money, where we talk about personal finance and all things in the midden. Kevin, how you doing?
Doing excellent. How about yourself, Will?
Good. Can't be doing better on this nice, fine April morning.
Yeah.
Spring has been shining through.
Yep.
Getting a couple good days in the 70s now. I'm not completely convinced that we're out of the out of winter's grasp.
I know we're not. We're going to get a reminder sooner or later. Yeah.
Remember back to 2018, we got that ice storm? It was like 2 or 3 weeks into April.
I don't remember it, but it doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
I was driving back from seeing a friend downstate, and driving back, the temperature swing was like 30 or 40 degrees.
Yeah.
And I get back to Millen, I'm like, man, this is like coming back from like spring break right now.
I think I blocked it out is what happened. Yeah. I don't want to recall things like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So springtime, golf season. I know you started golfing relatively recently.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. 2 years ago. Yeah.
So, have you been out yet this year?
Yeah, I went out to the driving range, local driving range, a couple days ago.
Yep.
I feel great. Long game is really good. Everything else, yet to be determined.
Sure. It's always something, right? Yeah. If your long game is great, your short game's terrible. If your short game's great, you can't
drive the ball. You're always working on something.
Yeah. And then putting is just like an...
Goodness, don't get me started on that.
Forever impossible, right? Mm-hmm. It's just...
get me started. At least
two putts a win.
My strategy for this season, so last year is all about driving. I feel like I'm marginally better. And so I'm thinking in my head, you know what? If I just get halfway decent at chipping and putting, maybe if I just drive the ball far enough, I can avoid everything in the middle and just try and go up for an easy chip. I don't know.
You could be like Happy Gilmore, right? Just smash every drive 400
and
yards.
And then three or four putt to get in.
Yeah, exactly. just get like a bogey on each hole and you'll be an 18 handicap you'll be great. Yeah.
You know, it all sounds easy in my head, but wait till we actually get out there.
Right. Yeah. That's actually funny you mentioned. I was watching a guy play the other day online and he was smashing drives. Then he'd get up on the green and he literally had that hockey stick swing on the green.
Yeah. Okay.
And so as impressive as he was with the driving, it was seeing him come back to reality with the putter was kind of good to see from my perspective. Like, okay, he's not so great after all. I can work and maybe catch up.
It's such an unforgiving game.
Mm-hmm.
It's unforgiving. Like, I'll be out there having fun. I try and line up a shot, goes far left, far right. I'm like, having fun out here.
Yep.
This is okay.
But then you just hit that one shot, right?
Oh, like, it keeps everything 18, together.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you're 15 yards off the green. You hit a beautiful chip that rolls within 3 feet of the hole, or maybe it even goes in, and you're like, I'm getting the hang of this.
Yeah. My score is going to go down. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then to no avail.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you've been playing golf now, what, 20 years?
Oh, gosh. On and off. I mean, I've played golf for probably 20 years, but how frequently I play, that's the problem, right?
Oh, sure.
I may play a dozen times a year. I think last year I probably played a little bit more because the boys are more interested in it now.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I find that to be just a great activity for us to get out and play golf and kind of mess around, have some great conversations out on the golf course. So, I'd love to get better, so we'll see.
What is your new year? What is your favorite local golf course?
Favorite local? It's probably Apple Mountain.
I have to agree with you on that.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I just love that, you know, you've got some hills, there's some elevation changes and whatnot.
Some challenging water shots, too.
Oh, yeah. So really like that. I mean, there's a lot of great golf courses around, really throughout Michigan.
Oh, you can't beat it.
Tremendous golf. But locally, that'd be my favorite local public course.
It never ceases to amaze me. People are like, oh, you know, Michigan doesn't have X, Y, and Z, A, B, and C. But there's a lot of really nice things within our state that people just don't, or maybe they take for granted. And the golf courses is one such thing. Now, I understand that it only pertains to such a percent of people who actually go play golf, but we compete up there for national rankings.
Oh, absolutely.
All the time.
Yeah.
Like Arcadia Bluffs.
Oh.
Known nationally.
Yeah. Yep. I've never played there.
Never played there.
I'm not sure that I would enjoy it.
I'd be afraid to play there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure I would enjoy the views. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I played one time at a course similar to Lochinhith, which is just maybe an hour north of there, just north of Traverse City. And it was so beautiful, but so hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the hardest, probably one of the most beautiful courses I've ever played on, but the most challenging course I've ever played. My score showed, I had all kinds of bumps and bruises from that day.
Well, it plays such into psychology, right? Because you hit one bad shot, you're like, crap.
Yeah. And then it's like a domino effect, right? You have one bad shot and it gets in your head, and then there's a second and a third, and next thing you know, you've strung together three or four holes where you're frustrated. And
how do you go come back against that? I mean, it really takes a lot of discipline.
Yep.
Like with investing over a long-term time horizon, it takes a long, long, long time to really get your emotions under control, under check. Yep.
I think that's a great segue into the topic today.
Imagine that.
Yeah, psychology of investing. Great job.
Yeah, yeah.
Making that transition. But I think to your point that you just made, it's all about long-term and fundamentals, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the things that are going to make us successful. So if we draw a correlation to golf, right? If you play for a relatively long time and you play consistently and stick to fundamentals of what is going to work, then you're going to have some degree of success, right?
Where and the score is going to show, right?
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And similarly, I know we just did a show about influencers.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, sure.
Same thing with golf.
Remember that, yeah.
There's all kinds of influencers with golf, right, that say, oh, do this, do that, the swing path, all these different things. Next thing you know, you've got 37 different things going through your mind.
Absolutely.
Every shot you're going to take.
Yeah.
And you end up just screwing it up.
Or you have so many people that focus on just the driving part, you know, that first initial shot. Because to be quite honest, it's kind of empowering to go hit like a little, I mean, I understand it's a tiny golf ball, but to go hit that 200, 250 yards, I'm not going to kid anyone. I can't hit past 220 barely, but besides the point.
Yeah. No, I mean, especially when you're on, you know, you're on the tee box with like three of your buddies and
we're really trying to
outdrive one another. When you get up to your ball and be like, oh, look, I'm a little bit further than you, Will. What do you think of that? Right.
Yeah. But of course, well, a lot of people, I mean, if you just focus on one small thing, you might get really good at that one thing, but there's so many things that go into golf, like investing too, because I heard the craziest story from a coworker of mine. And so he used to work at a country club when he was in college, and there is a PGA tour. Now, I can't remember what PGA professional it was, but he would go to the course, and one thing that he recognized was that he only spent like 20 to 30% of his time driving and more those upper, or I should say the lower echelons for his irons, but the majority of the time was chipping and putting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, because if you forget about that part of the game, your game's incomplete.
Yeah.
Just like with investing too. I mean, it's a lot of fun to go hit those long, long drives. It's exciting. Just like, well, you could go find those high growth stocks. I mean, who doesn't want to go into a cryptocurrency and go up 300% overnight? Well, just like a bad tee shot. Go right. It could ruin your day, ruin your score, just like a bad investment count.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think to that point too, like, I don't know if you've ever played with some old timers, right? Who hit it like 180 down the middle on the drive. Mm-hmm. And then they hit, you know, 150 yard shot into the green and two, and like nothing about their game is impressive, if you will, like visually. Mm-hmm. But they're just straight down the path, right? Onto the green, into the hole. And, you know, everybody else is trying to outdrive one another. Yeah. And
well, they know consistency more than anything, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's like if you're going to think about baseball with your at-bats, you're not going to try and go hit a million home runs.
Right.
Get on base, get a couple singles and doubles, and you'll win the race.
Yep. And a 300 average is a great
average,
right?
We'll get you in
the Hall of Fame. Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah,
so
sure.
So 3 out of 10, and you're a winner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... And I think that's similar when you think about the psychology of investing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's all about being consistent, right? Taking your time, not jumping after those opportunities that seem exciting, right?
The can't miss.
Exactly. Yep. The quick money, the double your money overnight kind of thing.
Well, to your point, when we were talking about that financial influencing episode, you mentioned the fear of missing out.
Oh, yeah. Huge when it comes
to investing. So many people miss out on it. I mean, don't get me wrong. We're all human. Yep. When I saw Bitcoin going up initially in 2017, I'm like, what's stopping this thing right now? It's only going up right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought about putting some money in there, but as you can imagine, as easy as things come up, they can easily go back down. When Now, I will say that when it comes to more speculative assets like that, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for, and we've talked about this before on a prior podcast about having that sort of mad money account or that fun money account, right? So I guess we're not saying don't have fun with it. Don't take some chances, but only take chances with that which you're willing to lose.
Absolutely.
Right? Particularly when it comes to some of those special asset classes like cryptocurrency, which is a very polarizing subject. A lot of folks have very high opinion of it. Many folks have a very low opinion of it. Mm-hmm. I'm probably somewhere in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like there's something there. I don't know exactly what it is.
Yeah, sure.
And you don't know which one or whether it's just the blockchain that's the value or if it's the currency itself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to take a chance with a small amount of money on some of it to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See where it can go. And, you know, it really ties into why it really should be in that small fun account too.
Right.
Humans feel loss much more than gains, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I could imagine if you had an opportunity, would you rather, let me ask you this, would you rather see an investment go up 200% or lose 30% of your account value?
Oh, I'd much rather see it go up 200%.
Yeah.
30% down. It's kind of funny you say 30% down because when we talk about emotions and psychology of investing, of course, I was in the business back during the Great Recession, right? And
sure.
That still has left a scar on me and on many people that were invested, you know, throughout 2007, 2008 that recall that Great Recession.
It really scars you for a long time.
Oh, yeah. It's still there for me.
Yeah.
I'm always sort of I have a bit of a pessimism that's always there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm always in a bit of protection mode, even when things are going really well. I mean, you know, part of it is I started my career just as like the dot-com burst or bubble was happening.
Yeah, sure.
And then, you know, markets went up for a few years. Then we have 2007-8 take another big shot to the gut at that point.
And it really ingrains you in that,
that
whole type of fashion. I've heard of plenty of stories. If we all ever wonder, you know, why grandma and grandpa, why they're so conservative, why they may not trust the banks. Well, during that Great Depression time frame, you didn't have a lot of these controls.
Right.
That we have in place right now. I mean, so you have those two or three banks from 2023 that went under. Well, the government was able to go take a step in and really limit any FDIC losses. Well, 1930s, a lot of those same protections weren't around too. And so for a lot of people that may have lost that money, that's why those memories are ingrained into them.
Yeah.
That's why they act that way.
And they're ingrained into us too at varying degrees, right? So like my parents, for instance, my dad was born in 1938. You know, he's technically silent generation and his parents definitely were, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they passed that on into us just through the way that they're saving and whatnot. So I certainly have a part of that within me, whereas different generations may not have as much of that, but yeah.
No, it's certainly crazy to go see what kind of environment that can really grow up into. Because if you go look at myself for when I really came and started working was 2013. And so a lot of what happened from the great financial crisis had already happened.
Yes.
Now, of course, I can read about this in a book. I could only listen and read about it so much, but experiencing it firsthand is something completely different too. And so since 2013, with the exception of a minor blip in 2020, a little bit of negative year in 2018, then 2022, there really haven't been that many negative market moments.
Correct. Yeah.
Over the last 10, 11 years. And so it's a completely different experience.
It is. Yeah. And I think I'm actually, in a strange way, I'm thankful for going through that Great Recession back in 07, 08, because I do think it does inform, you know, your future thinking as even when markets are going off like they are now, right?
Yeah.
There's always a bit of trepidation in me to say like, well, I'm not going to go all in with this idea, right? I'm not going to jump at NVIDIA right now, right? Because it's, while it might still be a great stock to invest in, I'm certainly not going to invest too much of my money.
And it's so tough to. It's so tough to go figure those things out because they are pulling with how much money is flowing into that company right now. They are starting to go pull some future sales.
Right.
From, you know, 2025, 6, 7. Yeah. Into what their current financial projections are right now, which, you know, it can now don't get me wrong, they can continue to go climb up. They make an amazing product.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And they're able, their CEO is one of the best, quite frankly, one of the best CEOs I've ever read about, witnessed about, watched any videos about. And so he's doing a lot of great things right, but
yeah.
you wonder, you know, how long can certain things go up? And that's why you go preach diversification, because if you go back 24 years, Cisco.
Yeah.
Late 90s, Cisco, one of the best, largest companies when it came to the tech space. But here's a little fun little trivia fact. From Cisco's market high, I believe this is correct, from Cisco's market high in 2000, they still have an eclipse.
Wow.
Where their stock price was.
Wow.
And the company's still growing.
Yeah.
They do so many amazing things
mm-hmm.
with tech, with technology. But sometimes you pull that valuation, so much of those results forward that it's tough to go eclipse that going into the future.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah.
And I'm sure with technology, it doesn't make it any easier too, because instead of, okay, log on to my, okay, well, this is going to go back a little bit, but the baby commercials with investing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What investing service was that?
Was it E-Trade?
Oh gosh.
With the I know exactly what you're talking
about. I can envision it so easy. A baby can do it, maybe that's the caveman one. Anyway, we're both thinking of the same one. And so you'd log on to your website, you go check your account balances. Okay. That process, you first off, you would have to go do it at your work computer or at home.
Sure.
You go take the time. There are barriers.
Oh yeah.
In order to go do that. Now it's frictionless.
Yes.
Now I go pull up my phone, recognize my face ID, and boom, go pull it up like that. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well, and it doesn't help too that some of these investing applications, they're playing right into emotion.
Oh, yeah.
Bright red, bright green.
Sure.
Some confetti goes off.
Yeah, and it's amazing what those colors, how they impact our thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
You look, I saw something recently about a weather forecast, right?
Oh, okay.
And like 5 years ago, the same weather forecast that showed the same temperatures was green, as in green is good, right? And today, the same temperatures, and it was red, giving off more of the temperature really hadn't changed over that 5 year average, but it made us feel very differently.
That's interesting.
About it. Now, that's not to say that I'm like a climate change denier, because I'm definitely not, but it was more along just on how colors can influence
and go the perceive way that we emotion think. Like that too.
Emotions are incredibly important when it comes to investing, right? Mm-hmm. Because when markets are up, we're feeling really good.
Oh yeah, hey, you're feeling great.
And a lot of folks are calling us wanting to buy, right? They have a certain stock that they really like and they want to buy. They're seeing markets turn over at some point and coming down, not feeling so good. They get to sort of a bottom and suddenly they're not feeling good at all. They want to sell. And they're doing exactly the opposite of what an institutional buyer would do, right?
Yeah.
They're buying high. The average investor is buying high and selling low, whereas institutions are kind of, they're doing the exact reverse. And that's why average returns by an institution are going to look so much better than the average returns of an individual investor.
You know, Kevin, that brings up a really, really good point. I think I was in your office maybe a week or two ago, and you showed a really, really cool chart.
Yeah.
It showed the average return by investor type.
Sure.
And then the retail investor.
Right.
I think the average, like, I can't remember what the statistics were. Maybe you can help me out here. But I know the retail investor is only 3.5% versus, or someone should be having a full, was it mutual funds or ETFs?
I don't recall exactly, but I do recall what you were talking about. And by the way, that's one of the resources that I really like to use is JP Morgan Asset Management, Dr. David Kelly, The Guide to the Markets. You know, there's about 150 different slides available. I really like statistical and fact-based.
It's a really good way of seeing, like visualizing the information, right?
Absolutely.
Because it's one thing, like what we're trying to go do is trying to just basically tell you from the chart, but really to go see those bar charts and like really go see the differences between what your average investor might get versus if they were fully invested within a mutual fund over a given time period. But to fill in more of that chart, their return was basically half of what it should have been because towards what you're mentioning, a lot of people, unfortunately, they buy high and they unfortunately sell low.
Yep.
But you know, it's nothing against them or anything like that, but it's so hard when you have all this active technology and when you have a news cycle, which unfortunately preys upon bad piece of information.
Upon fear.
If I were to go ask you, would you rather click on an article that says the Dow Jones Industrial drops 500 points today?
Yeah.
Or good news today, the Dow Jones Industrial climbed 150 points.
Yep. Yeah, you're always going to click on the negativity. And I know there are statistics around that too. Yeah, I mean, you have to, and I think for most people, that's really a large part of the value that a financial advisor or relationship manager can provide is that emotional management. I think probably, you know, 8 or 9 times out of 10, my job is to sort of manage emotions for folks.
So, absolutely.
You know, they're feeling really good and wanting to buy a particular stock, or let's say they want to buy gold because they saw a commercial on television about the U.S. currency falling apart. Or so managing those emotions, I think, is really important, making sure to keep folks focused on the long term, right? We'll have your, you know, bringing them back to sort of the core. Have your goals changed? Have your long-term goals changed? Has your goal for retirement changed? Revisiting the plan. And if there haven't been any substantial changes to their lifestyle, or then just making sure to go back to those core fundamentals and saying, hey, nothing's really changed. Let's not make any rash decisions and keep the fundamentals in place.
Yeah, having those helpful guardrails in place helps people out immensely. One of the things that I do, and so for my 401k, I don't have the app on my phone.
Sure.
I want to make sure, because I know if the app's on my phone, I'm more likely to go check on it. But for myself, for my goal, I'm not going to retire for another, 35, 36 years. Yeah. And so it could be negative this day, this month, this quarter and year, but I'm not going to need the money for a longer set amount of time.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, looking at things in too short of a window, it just isn't helpful.
And that's so crazy too, because you think about a year, it's like, you know, you can physically, like, I go think back to a year ago, so much has changed over a year, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, average life expectancy is 75, maybe 80 years old. That's such a small amount of time.
Yeah.
Grand scheme of things.
It really is. Yep. Yeah. I mean, we should really, I've always felt like judging performance over really more of like a 3 to 5 year window is most helpful, right?
Yeah.
Because when you're looking at it in shorter terms than that, I just don't find it to be very helpful.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more. And so what are, besides listening to this amazing podcast, what are some good resources that you like to go look into for investor psychology?
Sure. So like I said, the one in particular that I really like is The Guide to the Markets from Dr. David Kelly. It's probably my most utilized resource. I love the charts and the graphs that are available. I really like to draw folks back into fact versus fiction, right? Mm-hmm. I want to show statistics to support our beliefs as opposed to just sharing my opinion about things. And so I think that for me is the most valuable resource that I have.
That's really good. So I'm going to go less away from the research, more for the blogs, columns, that piece of information. And so I really enjoy reading two people with investor psychology.
Yeah.
So the first one's Jason Zweig.
Okay.
He has been a legendary columnist for the Wall Street Journal now for, I think he's been at the Wall Street Journal for maybe 15, 20 years.
Okay.
I could be mistaken, but in the industry for so much longer. He writes in such an eloquent way that can really help explain topics in a very easy way.
Yeah.
Another guy who's more recent to the scene is a guy named Morgan Housel.
Okay.
He writes his blog at the Collaborative Funds, and he writes things in such an easy-to-digest format.
Yeah.
And just very easy stories from things that may have happened in the past. And just it's very easy to go draw parallels between one thing and another thing. And he's actually written one of my favorite books of all time, and so it's called The Psychology of Money.
Okay.
And just writes really, really interesting stories, and I think one of the most beneficial things that I really appreciate from his writing is, now I could be misquoting him completely wrong. So I apologize, Morgan, if you're listening and I completely butcher this, what you mentioned, but he had mentioned at one point, well, if I can communicate a topic in just 6 or 7 pages, why continue to go add fluff onto that chapter?
Sure. Yeah.
And so he's not trying, like, he's perfectly got the length down. It's a very easy to read book. It's one of my most favorite books I've ever read.
I'm going to have to check that out. I think to your point, most folks want the plain vanilla flavor, right? They want to be able to explain it in a way that like a fifth grader or sixth grader would be able to understand it, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you start getting too complicated or talking about, and sometimes statistics can be that way in charts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where particularly without context, draw a lot
it's
of different things away from it. So I would love to. What was the name again?
Morgan Housel.
Okay.
The Psychology of Money. And then that was 3 or 4 years ago. That's a bestseller.
Okay.
And I think it's actually an option to a movie.
Oh, okay.
Which should be really cool.
Yeah.
And then the other book that you just released is The Same as Ever. And so it ties back different things that have happened in history versus where things are happening right now. And he's an amazing writer. It's a very, very easy read, either book.
Well, I like that. The idea of recency bias, right, is kind of a little bit what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Right there, where I think you and I both probably hear it all the time that, you know, time it's different.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm going to keep track of how many times I hear that. And I've been doing it for the past few years now. Because it does feel different when you're in it, right?
Of course.
It feels like, oh, we haven't seen this before. But I think if you look throughout, kind of like we're talking about, a long period of history, mm-hmm. we really have experienced a lot of things.
A lot of similar. Unnatural things. Yeah, of course.
And, you know, it's just a part of life, and mm-hmm. we're going to survive and thrive, and everything's going to be okay. And that's, again, back to emotions. But yeah.
So I have to mention one more book, mm-hmm. Millionaire Next Door. Have you read that one?
I have not, but I'm very familiar with it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm very familiar with it. Yeah.
So that, for the audience out there, is another really, really good book. And so this guy, it's been a while since I've read it, probably about 10 years, but he takes a look at some of the habits and what the secret millionaire next door may or may not do. And so, for instance, now this is old data that I'm trying to remember and cite back, but you may think a millionaire might drive that Mercedes-Benz.
Yep.
Might drive that Porsche.
It's a Honda Accord.
It's a Honda Accord.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm very familiar with the book. Yeah. I know its tenets. I haven't read it, you know, front to back. But yeah, absolutely. And I think we find that too in the workplace, right? Where oftentimes the folks that come in and look flashy, right? They're driving a fancy car, you know, an expensive car, have a great big house. They really haven't saved all that well. Mm-hmm. Where those folks that are driving the Toyota Corolla or the Honda Accord, living in the ranch next door, and they've saved, you know, millions of dollars. So
I couldn't agree more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Kevin, time for our listeners and viewers' favorite segment. What have you been watching?
Sure. So I went a little bit different. What have I been reading a little bit this time?
Okay.
Okay, so.
Let's hear it.
Green Lights is a book that I recently read. Are you familiar with it?
Matthew McConaughey. I have not read it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed it. And I think for me, I was able to draw some correlation between the book and my life. Mm-hmm. And really what the theme of the book is looking for those opportunities. Sometimes what appears to be a red light or what appears to be a yellow light could be a future green light, right? And looking at things that are occurring around you or in your world and reframing them so that you see them as opportunities. So I think about like myself in particular and things that felt like red lights at the time, but were actually green lights when I look in the rearview mirror. And so one of those was, you know, I left Michigan and went to college in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And I did so by myself, didn't have any friends or going with me. And at the time, when I first arrived, felt a bit like a red light, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, I'm unfamiliar with everyone. I'm really not feeling comfortable here. But long-term was an incredible green light for me, right? Because it challenged me in a lot of different ways.
You have to kind of force yourself to get out of that natural shell. And this is before Facebook too.
Yeah. So all my friends, you know, I'm talking to them on the phone. They're at Michigan State or whatnot, having a great time all hanging out with one another. Well, I'm in Colorado hanging out with a bunch of strangers, maybe feeling a little depressed that I'm not involved. But in the rearview mirror, great experience for me. And the other one, maybe at another show, we'll have to talk a little bit more about it.
Okay.
But was when I hitchhiked to Alaska with a good friend of mine when I was in college.
Really?
Yeah. And
Again,
at the time, seemed like there were many events throughout that time frame, those few months, that felt like red lights, you know, when we were eating in homeless shelters. And
were you trying to be on the show Deadliest Catch or something?
Yeah, right. A little bit. Yeah, we were trying to make our tens of thousands in that. And I know my buddy Nick watches the show regularly, and he's probably hopefully listening in on this and is seeing back into his memory bank too.
Mm-hmm.
But in retrospect, incredible green light, I think, for both of us, where we kind of knew what we didn't want to be doing with the rest of our lives. We were 20 years old, and in the rearview mirror, great experience, but at the time felt a lot like a red light.
That's pretty tough to come after that a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So what about yourself?
I have been watching Masters of the Air.
Okay.
So Masters of the Air follows the same type of series sequence as Banner Brothers did, early 2000s.
Sure.
The Pacific that came out, maybe 2009, 2010, one of those 2 years. So Band of Brothers is all about the 101st Airborne during World War II. So it follows them from their from boot camp to going over to Europe, D-Day, all throughout Europe. The Pacific covers the Marines during the Pacific Theater during World War II, a lot of different personal stories within there, an amazing, amazing show. And so since that point in time, they have been hinting at, let me just paint you a scene. They've been hinting at this show for 14 years.
Wow.
Finally gets released. So Masters of the Air, as you could probably guess, all about the Air Force during the European theater during World War II. It's on Apple TV.
Yep.
It is nothing short of extraordinary.
Yeah.
So not only, in my opinion, what I really like about the show is that there's multiple different character lines. They show aerial combat. They show people getting shot down out of the sky.
Sure.
There's people escaping Europe. There's people who are prisoners of war in Europe. And it really shows really the duality of so many different experiences that you really don't commonly think about.
Sure. We'll have to check it out.
It's visually stunning.
And some of the there's a great cast.
There's a great cast of actors too. And I think this doesn't spoil anything, but like it really surprises you that like the amount of loss. I mean, I don't mean this any bit light of a way, but there's a lot of loss in World War II. But
sure.
They really paint it home with the cast of actors. And, you know, unfortunately, some of the actors don't make it from episode one to episode nine.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an amazing show.
Yeah. I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with that, appreciate everyone listening to another great episode of Mint Money.